in anything but discrimination.
So now, next on the line, we have Dean Becker from Drug Truth Radio and Cultural Baggage.
Caller, are you there?
Hello.
Hey there. Woo! Welcome to the studio.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this chance to talk to your listeners.
Right now, you're in Nelson, British Columbia. Lakes, mountains, trees, spring-like weather.
Well, that sounds a whole lot better than here. The weather's okay here, but it's flat as a pancake.
And, oh, no.
And full of drug warriors.
Oh, no.
So, Dean, how long have you been doing your show for?
It's just a little over 3 years now, about 3 years and 3 months.
And what gave you the impetus to start Cultural Baggage and Drug War Truth? And actually, before you answer that, can you tell me, what are these two shows? Like, what are they designed to do?
Well, okay, I have the 420 Drug War News, which are three-minute pieces. They're designed to air within other news programs, perhaps, or some stations just air them right in the middle of a music show at 420. But they're designed to give people kind of a daily update, a fresh look at what's going on with this drug war. And then I do the half-hour show on Tuesdays here, put it up on the net by Wednesday morning. And basically, it gives us a chance to do an in-depth interview with people who are willing to talk about the subject of drug reform. Now, other than one gentleman, the district attorney of my home county here, Harris County, we put more people in prison than anyone in, you know, Russia, Red China, North Korea, for drugs, minor amounts, empty pipes, empty bags, doesn't hardly matter. But he was the only drug warrior that I've been able to interview, and I'm sure his secretary caught hell for having allowed that to happen.
You've had like your show is played right now on 25 different stations throughout
yes,
the U.S.
I think we've got three or four. I'd have to do a tally in Canada now, and we have 22 here in the U.S.
What do you attribute your success to?
The truth. The truth just stands the test of time. There's nobody. I've talked personally to the drug czar, John Walters, invited him to come on my show, and he wouldn't even talk to me face to face, and he just looked at me like I was, you know, not there. But I've contacted John Ashcroft's office, the former attorney general. I've talked to the state attorney general, the governor, the mayor, the police chief, and everyone in my chain of command, if you will, and asked them to come on and explain to me why we need eternal drug war. And, of course, none of them can do it.
So have you ever yourself been a victim of the war on drugs? Like, are you a drug war veteran? Like, have you
up until 1981, I had been arrested 13 times.
Oh, my God.
Mostly for being drunk with marijuana in my pocket, mind you.
Okay.
But I think that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And since 1981, I've not had one ticket, one arrest, no car accidents, no involvement with the law whatsoever. And I think most of that I can hang on the fact that I quit drinking in 1985.
Nice.
And
the hard drugs. You let go of the hard drugs.
I let go of the hard drugs. I promised myself in my old age I might do a little peyote, but I haven't done anything like that in about 25 years.
Wow. Yeah, because sometimes we find that people we interview and activists that we know in ourselves, a lot of them get into it just by getting busted and having a horrible time with cops or getting sent to jail for years or, you know, they just, the experience just so shocks them into becoming active that they just can't help themselves.
Well, I think there was some of that involved in my change, if you will. I mean, we had a discussion a few weeks ago about this, and the fact is that in 1979, I had an experience in the desert that I felt the Lord was talking to me and telling me to end this crazy law, this war against marijuana users in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out as a sacramental type reformer, if you will. And as I got further into it and started meeting some of these fine people that have been guests on my show and getting the straight lowdown from them, I began to realize that it's all a fraud. There is no legitimacy to this drug war whatsoever. And I think that Judge James P. Gray, he's written a great book, Why the Drug War Has Failed and What We Can Do About a Judicial Indictment of the War on Drugs. And he was my first guest.
Wow.
He dared to speak to me, a lowly hippie, trying to start up a radio show. And since that point in time, he's been my guest probably more than anyone, five, perhaps six times, because his book outlines the nature of the problem, and it gives us the solutions, at least gives us good advice on what those solutions might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that as time goes by, the caliber of the guests, you know, I get U.S. congressmen, Canadian senators, Pierre Claude Nolan was a guest, Larry Campbell from Vancouver, you know, people who have analyzed this problem in depth and determined, you know, much the same of what I'm saying. There's no logic involved.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good reason, the truth.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Yeah, and as I say, there's nobody willing to discuss this. No one who thinks the drug war is a good idea. I see some stories. I want to relay something to you that I had forwarded to me today. You guys might see it yourselves if you're aficionados of the Media Awareness Project, mapinc.org.
Yeah, the but recent ruling.
There's a story that came out today. They have an audio tape that reveals a terrifying campaign in the war on drugs, and it's coming out of the Knoxville News out of Tennessee. And basically, this man was getting busted, but his wife had set a tape recorder to recording the events in the room. And they show beatings, the cops tell him to shut the expletive up, that you may not walk out of here, you know, if you don't give us your money and your drugs and sign this piece of paper that said it was a legitimate search. And so, in essence, you know, they're torturing American citizens. And it happens all the time, but it's just in this one instance that they happen to have a tape recorder running that the police did not find.
I think it's going to happen sooner or later, right? Like Rodney King, sooner or later, enough of that happens that it's going to get captured on and recorded.
Well, yes. And the tough part of fighting this drug war, because I feel I preach, you know, in majority to the choir, because I figure 90-something percent of my listeners are, you know, already understand the problem. Mm-hmm. And maybe are looking for clues towards that solution. But it really boils down to, it's a lie that's been set in place. And some people think that it helps some people. So they're willing to overlook this diversion from the Constitution, from our normal way of performing justice.
Mm-hmm.
And as time goes by, they hand more and more of these liberties, if you will, to the hands of those who claim they have a higher calling and they know better how to handle this, until it just becomes, well, everybody's jaded and faded. They don't have the focus necessary to maintain a democratic or a true republic. And the lies get bigger. You look at the U.S. war in Iraq, for instance.
Oh, boy.
It's allowed to happen because people have handed over. The U.S. Congress did it, in fact. Before the war started, they handed George Bush a blank check. You take care of this, we'll trust you. And, of course, you can't do that. You can't trust any aspect of your society, let alone your justice system, to the whims of people who claim to have a higher calling. And the drug war is a sham. There is not one bit of justice to it. And yet it continues. And why? Because people are afraid.
And it's expanding up here. Like, we just did a story just before you came on air about how Texas Rangers were training RCMP officers how to profile people. And, in fact, pulled over an RCMP officer, a Vancouver police officer who they didn't know, and ended up searching his 2-year-old kid. And this is a Texas Ranger.
Yes,
and so it's spreading. Like even the American drug war is coming up to Canada, where their officers are showing our officers how to violate people's rights.
And they will show them how to violate. That's for sure, because they don't, that higher calling leads these people. They don't have any remorse or pangs of guilt at all because they think they're doing some good. They're going to save little Johnny somewhere from having access to drugs if they can just arrest Johnny's cousin and his sister-in-law.
Yeah, well, you know? They searched little Johnny's diaper and didn't find anything this time. It's just
right, but,
it's outrageous.
Well, of course it is. And the point being that, you know, normal realms of investigation and using search warrants and going through, you know, the true legal system that was intended is irrelevant to these American police officers. If they can get away with it, they will do it. And that's just their normal, you know, method of operation.
So how long have you been... Now, if you've been doing this for this long and you haven't had any problems with the police yourself, right?
Right.
Why do you think it is that you're particularly protected in a country where it seems like drug war oppression is the norm?
Because I'm a reporter. I think that would probably be the number one reason. But secondarily, it's because I've gotten in their face. I go up here before my city council on a fairly regular basis.
Nice.
And tell them the truth and try to get them to accept parts of it. We have an ongoing effort right now. We want to allow for medical marijuana. You know, that have the city council recommend that the state legislature come up with a compassionate use law. Because here we don't even have referendums. You can't collect signatures and give them to the legislature. You can't force a ballot, to be put on the an initiative to be put on the ballot.
Oh my God!
Yeah, we are totally at the mercy of these legislators, and therefore it's necessary to leverage the situation through the city council towards the legislature to show that yes, the people of Texas would appreciate this. There was a recent study done here, Howard Scripps. Polling service did a survey in Texas, I think it was dated in November, that showed 75% of Texans are for medical marijuana. And yet the politicians pretend that didn't happen, that, you know, they, again, they have that higher calling.
They don't want to lose their funding.
Well, that's it, exactly.
They don't want to lose the cash cow.
I heard a recent study was done that shows $69 billion are spent in the U.S. now on this drug war. It was 50. That was the number I tracked for a while. But Jack Cole, the head of law enforcement against prohibition, was able to refine that number. $69 billion now.
Oh, my God.
And Texas is almost like, you know, so I guess maybe the drug war has got a heart that's kind of cut up. But it's one of the pieces of the heart of the drug war, right? It's like really bad down there.
Right, it is. There's a constant battle between California and Texas. Of course, they have a lot more people. But over which one arrests more people. And, you know, the United States in general, you've probably heard this, represents 5% of the world's population, yet we have 25% of the world's prisoners.
Yeah, the combined U.S. prison population is that of the whole entire rest of the world.
Yes.
How about that?
Yes, and isn't it amazing that We can
this is a democracy filled with people who are free, America. You know, like, America, but you've got the most people in jail.
Well, we do, and I was going to say that 5% number, that the 25% number, doesn't take into account that Texas, with a smaller number of people than California, has untold numbers. I mean, I'm sorry I don't have them in front of me, but we probably have, twice the national average of arrests.
Mm-hmm.
And my hometown or county here of Harris County probably has twice the number, the average number of Texans. So we're about four times worse than the main of the United States and 20 times worse than the rest of the world, right here in my little hometown.
And if I can remember correctly, I think that at least on the federal level, like all across the U.S., that something like half of those prisoners are in on drug charges.
Well, that's true. And if you take into account those who are there because they were drug users, you know, stealing to support a habit or, you know, otherwise involved in criminality to take care of their situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than that. The most telling thing, though, is that about 85% of those in our prisons are black. And what that says is this is a racial bias. It is a, as one of my guests, Eric Sterling, head of the Criminal Justice Policy Foundation, says, it's not slavery. It's not the, you know, the poll tax. It's not the Jim Crow laws. It's just the best mechanism they have available in this modern era to support white supremacy in today's America.
That's so true.
Well, they've done studies that show that there isn't really a larger number of black drug users, or, you know, there's an equal number of black and white drug users, that it's not, you know, it's not disproportionate across the population. It's proportionate. And that, so when you take a look at the statistics and you see that, you know, that something like two or three times more of the drug users who are in jail are black, you realize that there's something going on there that, you know, it's just not right. That the blacks are being signaled out, are being singled out for this oppression.
Well, indeed they are. And you stop and think about the fact that, you know, even if they arrested at the same rate, which they do not, even if they searched and arrested, but they focus on blacks. It is racial profiling in the beginning. But then they're given these court-appointed lawyers who say either you take the 5 years or you're going to get 20. And, they bargain a sentence. 95% of the people arrested in the United States do not go to trial.
Yeah,
they plea bargain before they ever get there.
I work in a law office, and I found that that the American prosecutors are some of the most rabid, like, that they win more of their cases than any in Canada because of the scare tactics and because of that kind of mechanism in the law that makes it so that the prosecutor can basically... You know what I mean? Would you even want to risk 20 years when you could just know that you could gamble with five? Like, but we see it because we have Canadians who are busted in the States with pot and that kind of thing. And I've got to see how the American prosecutors work. And they're way, way harsher than prosecutors up in Canada. That's for sure.
Now, I hear talk that in Canada, they are trying to balance the law. The ramifications, if you will, if you're arrested in Ontario versus Vancouver, that they want to try to bring it in line, though there's a great disparity there, as I understand, even in those provinces.
Yeah, it's a federal law that's basically applied differently to each province.
And here in the United States, if I lived in Humboldt County, California, I could grow 100 plants in the backyard. The sheriff would protect them for me.
Yeah.
Whereas if I grow one plant here in Houston, I can get 10 years in prison, depending on the district attorney's attitude.
That would be a cannabis laboratory. No, marijuana laboratory.
Sure,
or
manufacturing.
Something.
They call it manufacturing.
Oh, God. As if you're God.
Yes.
Like, I will create this plant.
Or you have an assembly line or something with a bunch of immigrant workers or something working for $5 an hour in exchange for buds or something.
Somebody attaching buds to the stalk for you. I don't
Yeah, yeah.
Gluing them on with crazy glue. I want to ask you about, you know, about the radio, about radio in general, because it's, you know, it's like this sort of amazing medium that we all share, you know, that, you know, you and me and Dustin, that we all kind of do this. And what is it about radio that makes it such a great form of expression for our activism, in your opinion?
Well, in my case, I was looking for an avenue to reach out to people, to awaken them to this truth, to make that bridge. And radio was the only way I had. Here in Houston, I'm lucky enough, there's a Pacifica station, one of the true voices of free speech, I think, in America.
Totally.
And I went down there and I said, here's an idea kind of sketched out, kind of show I wanted to do. And they put me to work for a gentleman here. His name is Ray Hill. He does a weekly show called The Prison Show, and it's, again, unique to Texas. He brings in a lawyer and, talks about the law for the first half hour, 45 minutes, and then he takes calls from families of those who are in prison.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And it gives them a chance to, I want to talk to Johnny at the Darrington unit. This is your mom, and we got the postcard, and, give them a chance to talk free of charge, if you will, if they can't travel, because so many people here in Texas in particular, you might get arrested in Houston, wind up being stored in Amarillo, which is some 600 miles away. And of course, the family can very rarely visit, but through this medium, and, they are able to pick up his show in various prisons around the state. It allows people to make that bridge happen, at least via the knowing it's going one way. Now, Ray put me to work 5 minutes a week, drug war news. And I did well, got good response, and they put me on from midnight to 1 a.m. every other week with my own show. And nobody died, and people liked it. And they moved me to 6:30 to 7 p.m. I lead to Flashpoints, which is one of our big free speech shows here. And I've never had one letter of complaint. Again, the caliber of the guests just keeps going up. I want to kind of push this one thought. We have the Shulgins, who are noted chemists.
Sasha, yeah.
And Anne.
Yes, Sasha.
And they have invented more than 200 psychedelic chemicals. They're going to be my guest on March 1st, and I'm really proud.
Oh, you lucky dog.
Yeah, I called and they said, we don't take interviews. We don't think the media understands. And I told them a bit and they said, maybe we will. Said, it sounds like you know what you're doing. And they're going to be on March 1st. I'm also aiming, for March 1st. Within March, I'm going to try to bring in Milton Friedman, the Nobel laureate. He's now 91 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm also contacting Albert Hoffman, who's discoverer. Of LSD.
Yeah.
And he's 99 years old. I'm going to see if I can call him in Switzerland and get that one happening.
Nice. There's two people in the States. I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but there's two guys in the States who were busted in 2003 with huge quantities of LSD. And it's been stirring in my mind that they got life in prison with no chance of parole for having LSD.
I don't find that surprising.
I know you don't find that surprising, but I'm just like, we got to reach out to those guys and try and interview and get them out there, because the fact is that LSD has helped change so many people's perceptions that for someone to get life in prison for creating it and getting it out there, those people should be honored as as war heroes.
Well, I would agree.
On the battlefield, like ones who've fallen on the battlefield, they should be lifted up to the highest.
We are talking about the U.S. I have interviewed a gentleman I'm going to visit him again here in the next couple of months. His name is George Mortarano.
Okay.
He's a federal prisoner sentenced to life without parole for marijuana.
Oh, my God.
For possession. They found him with a lot.
Yeah.
A couple of thousand pounds.
Yeah.
But they sent him to prison for life without parole. He's now in his 23rd year. And, Manuel Noriega, the Panama dictator, will be out before George Mortarano. He just hacked off the wrong people.
Oh, my God. Hey, see, that's... Those things just blow my mind. Like, that's where because in Canada, I haven't seen so much of that in the sentencing. We don't have sentencing guidelines. We don't have three strikes, you're out. We don't have any of that.
Right.
And so it's kind of,
Well, your judges are allowed to be judges. Here, it's more just playing a part in a play.
Yes,
they're,
you're right.
They're not allowed to use their discretion or intellect or... to balance things. It's just within the guidelines, and that's it.
No, yeah, you're right.
You're with all the minimum sentences and all that stuff. Yeah, it's become very mechanical. Dean, I want to ask you, now, if people want to listen to your show online and stuff, how do they get your show?
Well, sure. We have about 100 shows online now. They are at drugtruth.net. Drug Truth Network, drugtruth.net.
Nice.
And we have a version of one of your shows here, Drug Truth.
With Eugene Oscapella.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
You know Eugene?
I do. I've met him several times. He's a great guy.
He was just doing a bunch of PR for the fact that the border people in Canada and the U.S. were saying Canada is the largest marijuana exporter to the United States. And Eugene, of course, pointed out that Canada still only accounts for 2%.
Right. That, you know, Mexico is about 20 times as much as
And
U.S. Grows its own.
Yeah, guess what? The American people figured out how to grow their own, too. So, but it was nice to see Eugene out there getting it out there that, no, that's just more propaganda.
Well, and I admire what Eugene has done in regards to the war of terror, the war on drugs. He's pointed out that we begin to end the war of terror when we stop funding the terrorists with drug money.
Exactly. Okay, well, you know what? We've got that clip, and then we'll be right back.
Well, very good. Thank you.
Okay, just one sec.
Drug Truth Network, it's the 420 Drug War News. Of late, many major papers in Canada have been declaring that Canada now is the leading supplier of marijuana to the United States.
It's Eugene Oscapella. I'm a lawyer here in Ottawa, Canada, the capital of the country, the very cold capital, and I'm a member of the Canadian Foundation for Drug Policy, which is a drug policy think tank and reform group here in Canada. Well, the continued fabrication of stories about Canada being a major supplier of cannabis to the United States, those stories continue to percolate through the media here, and yet there's well-documented evidence from studies done in Canada, from studies done in the United States, from joint studies done by Canadian agencies and American agencies working together by the United Nations. All these groups have concluded that, in fact, Canada is a very, very minor supplier of cannabis to the United States, but that doesn't stop the misinformation from coming.
Despite the efforts of the U.S. Office of National Drug Control Policy and that of our drug czar, John Walters, a report by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police indicates that the United States is, in fact, its own number one supplier of marijuana, followed by Mexico, who exports at least 27 times the amount of marijuana attributed to Canada.
Eugene, you've written extensively on the nexus of the war of terror and the war on drugs.
Well, first of all, if you're really worried about a war on terror, you should stop financing the war on terror through the war on drugs. And I know we've talked about this before, but it's important for the listeners to understand that the link between drugs and the financing of terrorism is one caused by prohibition. In other words, prohibition makes drugs that would otherwise be very inexpensive there would be very little profit from selling them in the absence of prohibition. Prohibition turns these drugs into fantastically profitable products for both organized crime and terrorist groups. So by prohibiting drugs, we create this fantastically profitable black market that's enriching organized crime and terrorist groups around the world. You know, our governments, by supporting drug prohibition, are worsening the problem of terrorism. And second, you know, when we try to impose our own drug policies on other countries, that gets them, if you look at the example of Colombia, there's a lot of damage being done to Colombia, and there's a lot of damage now probably being done in Afghanistan by some of these attempts to eradicate crops and to get farmers off producing opium. That's going to create hostility to the countries that are pushing these policies. And so, you know, those are going to rebound and hurt American citizens. So government policies are actually going to increase the risk of terrorism to American citizens.
Will we ever learn? Dean Becker, 420 Drug War News.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio, 93.5 FM, CGLY, broadcasting live from Nelson over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaicoopradio.com. And we're back online here. Dean, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, right on. We just did the Eugene Oscapella piece.
So we want to thank you for being on air today.
Well, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your listeners. As I say, there's no justice, logic, scientific fact, or moral clarity involved in this drug war. It's time to end it. I hope folks will get on involved and help to do just that.
And you said that you've been getting better guests on your show, and I think that having you on our show, we're definitely getting better and better. That's for sure.
Well, thank you for that.
And if you're ever up here in Canada and in this area, you've got a place to stay and a warm bed to stay in and lots of people to meet and good water and hiking and all kinds of stuff. So,
I need to do that. I'm getting old enough. I need to get out of this hick town I'm in, I tell
you. Well, if you're ever out in the Kootenays, come to the mountains and you'll have a place to stay for sure.
I will do just that. And I kind of want to sign off, if you will, like I normally do on my show.
Great.
Because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, and I ask all of you to please be careful.
Well, blessings, Dean.
Blessings,
Dean. Have a beautiful night.
All right, you guys. You take it easy, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Drug Warrior.
All right, buddy.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have a real hard time ending good interviews, but we're getting better at it. So let's.
Hey, we should play that song, song 20 on the Stay Human.
Yes, you got it, brother. So this is Michael Franti and Spearhead. And if any of you are listening right now, aren't members of the Kootenai Co-op Radio, you should get your membership now. This is revolutionary radio. This is a radio that, you know, you wouldn't get anywhere else.
No,
it's the Kootenays.
Listener supported.
Because we're listener supported. Okay, we just got to get the CD in here.
Come no on. Corporate funding here, man.
That means that we have equipment that sometimes won't play the right tracks.
With the news that'll never be reported.
Okay, come on. Come on. If anybody out there has a CD player they'd like to donate to the studio so that this one will work, we'd be really happy because we're listener supported. Come on. No, it's spitting it out. Okay, I got to try this other CD player, folks, so just hold on here. Dan, what kind of format did you play?
It's, you know, it's a regular format. It's it should play. I don't know.
Okay, here we go. So if you love Kootenai Co-op Radio, if you love community radio, if you love Bob Marley, happy birthday, Bob, you should get a membership, CJLY, especially if you're in Kootenai Lake at 96.5 FM. All right, baby. Here we go.